Welcome to the Round 16 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined by Dunny.
G'day, Marcus. Good to be back, mate.
And we've got Bryce back with us. The last time Bryce was on was for a brief cameo. And if you thought it was a little bit weird that Bryce didn't say goodbye at the end there, it's because we unfortunately lost a little bit of his audio at the back end there. So hopefully we have a little bit more luck today. Bryce, welcome back to the show, mate.
Thanks for having me back on. Hopefully it's a bit of a longer cameo today.
Yep, looking forward to chatting footy with you, mate. All right, let's start off as we do each week with going around and talking about how our team scored on the weekend. I unfortunately am a little bit down in the dumps with Geelong losing and my team just sort of ebbing along there. So I know you both Adelaide blokes have had a good weekend. So I'll let you start things off on a cheery note. Dunny, how'd you go on the weekend, mate?
I finished up with 22.73 on the weekend, so could have been better, but certainly could have been much worse. I obviously suffered the Heaney 18 that a lot of people did, and obviously the Nat 5.43. Right up until about 5 minutes before I had to make the decision on whether to take Gawn as vice-captain or not, I was still umming and ahhing of whether to go him or Fife. Thank God I ended up going with Max Gawn, so... that was one little bullet dodge there, but overall, not a terrible week. But guys like Heaney, Oliver, Devin Smith sort of let me down a bit. But my ranking went up, and that's all positive. So picked up another 1,200 places this week. Still not quite as high as you, Marcus, but heading in the right direction still, which is a good thing.
Nice.
How did you go this week, Bryce?
Had a few weeks slightly below par, and it continued this week. I scored 22.13, so I dropped around 300 ranks to 4,700-ish overall. Took the Gawn VC, but had others stinking up the side like Devin Smith. I had Joel Smith on the field. I hadn't completed my back line yet due to some bench carnage with the when the teams were named. This week I've got a few trades in the bank, so hopefully make up some ground on the way home.
Dunny, I think you top scored for the week then just by a few points, but you pipped me.
Woohoo.
I scored 22.69, so by the barest of margins, but congrats on the win there, mate. Like you said, you seem to have some good luck when you come on the podcast, so that's good. I traded in Franklin this week to complete my team from Nick Holman. I've got to say there's one big thorn in my side right now, and his name is bloody Heathshaw. I can't believe I've done it to myself again. Oh, God. Watching him, it's painful. It is so painful. He scored 40, just awful since he's come into my side. I got him after round two, and it's got to be one of the worst trade-ins for the year. Miocek on the bench is just laughing away with a 73 there. So next time I know, when I've got the opportunity, take the bloody loophole with Heathshaw. Don't assume he'll outscore a rookie. Jeebus, very painful. But that's okay. I'll get over it. I'm a big boy, and hopefully he can bounce back with a bigger score this week. I painfully let Wingard go through to the keeper in search of big scores with Buddy Franklin. And so his 73 was a little bit disappointing next to Wingard's 122 or something like that. As Mark put it when we were discussing him over the last few weeks, I'm a bit of a fanboy there. So I'm definitely feeling a little bit sore missing out there. Port still got a good run for the next few rounds. So I'm sure there's some decent points still left in store there. So if anyone's picked up Wingard over the last few weeks, he's certainly been paying dividends. And unfortunately, Mark's one of them. But interestingly enough, Mark also brought back Todd Goldstein, I noticed, over the weekend, which is pretty freaking hilarious. He did manage a decent score for Mark at least. So cruiser back to Goldstein, and we'll wish him all the best for that. And also picked up Scott Pendlebury, which I don't know if he did that just to spite me 2 weeks after I traded him out. So I'll be watching with intent, and hopefully I can throw a few barbs his way when he gets back on in a couple of weeks. In terms of our super coach group, we actually have a new leader. Richard's team, Prochard, scored 24.51, which was massive. And he moved into fourth, taking the lead from Mark's Tankosaurus, who we've been following for a majority of the season. He's sitting fifth right at the moment. So very, very interesting right at the top. Still quite a few teams in it to win it. And so we wish Richard and Mark all the best on their quest for victory. All right, let's get on to the show now and what we'll be talking about this week. The headline is Fife's injury. He scored 43, and I think that was scaled up by about 8 points. It was on 35 when he got injured or something like that. At first, it looked a little bit precautionary as he came off in the first quarter, got assessed, came back on the ground, and then was iced for good in the second quarter. So I hope he didn't do any further damage in those few minutes that he came back on field. We'll spend the majority of the podcast this week talking about Fife. At this point in the year, most of us are dealing with injury trades, and being a bloke that's in most teams, he's certainly being discussed a lot in fantasy circles this week. Before we get into this week's topics, just a quick question from Adam Roth from Facebook. How do you reverse time so he doesn't lose some of his trades in the past 3 weeks? He's had McRae, Treloar, and Fife go down in the last three. And that's very painful. And Moosey, our guest last week, I think probably an even worse story there. Moosey traded McRae to Treloar and then Treloar to Fife. So if anyone's out there wondering just why the hell we've had three big injuries in 3 weeks, I'm pretty sure Moosey's the black cat that's just been strolling under the ladder. So terrible luck for Moosey there. And we're wishing him a little bit better luck. And hopefully he doesn't trade in the same place that I do this week.
Yeah, ask him who he's trading in.
Yeah, I'm going to stay away from him, yeah.
All right, let's get to the first question. This one's from Dane Wells from Facebook. What would be the number of games missed that you'd definitely trade Fife? He's such a gun that you'd actually want him in your team come finals time. But with low trades, you're basically unlikely to get him back into your sides if he goes out. Is it better to hold if he's out for 2 to 3? Where's sort of the boundary that you see Fife being traded out at? Bryce, where are you sitting on that?
Yeah, I guess there's a few considerations for the where the line is. I guess if you're low on trades, the number of weeks they're out can be a bit longer. Also, if you're playing for leagues, it tends to be a hold for about a 3, depending on where you are with respect to the top 8. But if we're talking overall, which we tend to focus more on, the line is probably about 2 or 3 for me. And it depends also on the cover that you have in the midfield or that you can swing forward. So if you have a wing guard or someone that you can play for 2 weeks, then you can save a trade by having cover there. It just depends on, it's really team dependent, but about 2 or 3 seems about the right.
Dunny, how about you, mate? How many trades do you have left, and is that factoring into your trade decision as well with Nat Fife?
Yeah, absolutely, Marcus. I mean, I've got 5 left at the moment, and I actually have $0 salary, like absolutely nothing in the salary bucket. I spent all of it last time. it is quite satisfying to see that, but it's also quite scary as well. But yeah, I'm very similar to Bryce. I think, you know, for me, 4 weeks is a definite trade.
Yeah, I think a good starting point is who do you have on bench? And a lot of people have torched their bench in order to complete their team. So if you're in that scenario like Dunny is and I am, that's a lot less attractive. So I've got Ahern or Ballard or Phillips filling in. And so I'm not really wanting to cop that for very long at all. If you have a Petrarca, you know, even though he's only scoring 85s, that's still a lot more palatable than a rookie scoring 40s. So in that situation, you're much more likely to hold if he's out for, you know, even 3 weeks. That might be something that you can stomach. The other thing to keep in mind is Fife is also one of the top scoring options in the game. Before his 43, he was averaging, I think, 124. So just in context, I think that there maybe is one other midfielder that's not injured at the moment who can average that amount, and that's Mitchell at 127, and McRae is obviously injured at 130 plus. So trading Fife out means you also have to pay the price, essentially, when he gets back into the team and starts outscoring potentially the options that you're trading into. So if you can, and you have a premium to tide you over, I'd be pretty tempted to hold unless it's a long-term injury. I think four is basically a definite trade regardless of your situation because we only have eight rounds left of scoring. So if a bloke's going to be out for half the time, I think it's probably a pretty good call to take the risk and trade him out. But if you have a premium on bench and he's out for, and the prognosis is three, I'd still be pretty tempted to hold. Now, I'm in even more dire straits because the rookie options that I have to cover also have questionable job security. Like Ahern was out this week until he was a late in. Phillips is not getting games at the moment. And Ballard's the only one who I have who's getting games. Of course, he's a mid forward, so I can use him, you know, as a loophole to bring in a forward rookie on field instead. But, you know, even still, I'm getting into quite sketchy territory. So the riskier your bench is, the more incentivized I think you are to probably trade in that situation. But again, trades play a big part in it. If you have a skinny bench and two to three trades left, if you're not facing a donut, you might just have to cop poor scores from rookies for a little bit because it's, you know, at least you have a rookie playing versus having a donut. If you torch, you know, one of your two trades left dealing with five, but then down the track you get a donut that you can't fix because you essentially did a bit more of a luxury trade, you'd be really sort of ruining that decision. So if you have three or less trades and you're not facing a donut with eight rounds to go, I'd be pretty tempted to hold even if Fife is a three-week injury. So as you both have mentioned already, there's a lot of factors at play here. You've got to look at your bench, how many trades you have left, what sort of DPP shenanigans you can use to cover the midfield. There's quite a lot to consider there. And unfortunately, as we're recording this on Monday night, we don't really have too much beyond, you know, a little bit of rumours here and there. On the website on afl.com.au, all we're getting is that he'll definitely miss this week, potentially more, which is completely useless for making Supercoach.
And Marcus, can I just throw another factor in there? And that is, you know, Freo is sitting now, well, they're two games outside of the eight. They face Melbourne away this week, then Port Adelaide at home, and then Essendon away. So let's say he's out for three and he comes back in the fourth week and they've lost all three of those games and now can't make the eight. Do you reckon that would be a factor in Ross Lyon saying, look, you know what, there's no point risking you. Let's put you on ice, play some of the kids for an extra week.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to come into consideration there?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, the extra week is definitely a big risk there. When in doubt, you wouldn't want to re-injure your star, especially with soft tissue injuries sort of being a compounding type injury. Mm-hmm. When you twang a hamstring once for the rest of your career, you're more likely to do it again. And so with a player that is such a protected species like Nathan Fyfe, they'll want to take minimal risks, especially if, you know, there's nothing left to play for bar sort of pride and development. So that's definitely a good call out. And so, you know, if there's chatter that it's 2 to 3 weeks, I'd be leaning to making a decision based on a 3 week prognosis. If it's 3 to 4, I'd be making a decision of a 4 week prognosis. So I think that's a fair call out, especially because when, you know, the medical team gives these sorts of predictions, they tend to, you know, give a span of time. So that's a good call out there, Dunny. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the boundaries at which you'd trade Fife out and the different factors that would influence that decision. Now, just for the sake of continuing the conversation while we have incomplete information, let's say we're in a situation where we should be trading Fife out once we get a little bit more information on his injury. Let's just talk about some replacement options. So Dane, in his initial question about Fife, was asking whether or not a Josh Kelly type was the right option. So I guess as a starting point, in terms of a top scoring option as a replacement for Fife, let's just assume, you know, all premiums are up for grabs. Who would you gents be starting with? I think for me, the top three are actually Mitchell, Kelly, and Dangerfield.
It's a real tough one. I think that one of the strong considerations I make at this point of the season is the injury risk. But if I put that aside and just consider scoring potential on average from this point onwards, Mitchell is probably number one. It'd be hard to split the next two. I'm probably equal three players in the second and third spot would be Cripps, Dangerfield, Kelly, and I think that there's a bit of a gap after that. So yeah, Mitchell one, Cripps, Dangerfield, Kelly equal.
Dunny, how about you, mate? Are you looking at similar players, or do you have somebody a bit more left field?
I'd probably put Mitchell first. I'd probably put Cripps and Kelly in second place, sort of equal, and then Dangerfield third. I've been a bit disappointed with Dangerfield's output this year. Hopefully, he can turn that around. But yeah, I guess when I say disappointed compared to what we're used to seeing from him, he's still very, very good, of course.
Yeah.
Another one that you sort of want to look at, maybe throwing out there is Gaff. He's been pretty reasonable lately. And I'm not sure how heavily owned he is. I'm just having a quick look at that at the moment. He's only in 6% of teams, so it's certainly not that common. And he's gone 122, 136 in the last 2 weeks. And he's had five games over 120 this season. So he certainly can go big, and definitely a bit of a left field, bit of a unique option for people.
And he's also the picture of consistency. He's had three games under 100, the lowest being a 74. Just gets so much of the ball that even his poor games don't seem to be too awful. So that is good with Gaff. How about Clayton Oliver? It can be a little bit up and down, but we were talking about Oliver, Kelly, Treloar being sort of top three options for McRae just not too long ago. Of course, we were sort of restricted by buys in that particular round. But tempted by Oliver at all, or a little bit scared off his 59 on the weekend?
I'm an Oliver owner, so I wasn't real happy with his 59 on the weekend. But look, to be honest, he has been very, very good as well. If you look just before his buy, he had a pair of 120s. 240 plus games in there as well. So definitely another good player to consider there, Marcus, I think.
How about Lachie Neal as a bloke that's a little bit from left field, but Neal also seemed to score right in the year that Fife was missing. He's currently averaging 108.5, so really not too far off that top scoring rung. And he started off the season pretty slowly. 99, 96, 77, and 85 were his first four. But since then, he's only scored below 100 once. He's had seven scores above 110 since round five. So that's been a pretty damn good return from Lachie Neal. Tempted by him at all, Bryce?
I rate Neal quite highly. He played all last season, or a fair bit of last season and the season before, without Fife and scored pretty well. I think that he's probably a reliable, solid pick going forward. And I have him up there fairly level with Oliver, who's also fairly reliable as far as injuries go. And this point forward, I don't want to bring in a risk like potentially a Selwood. I'm a little bit nervous about Josh Kelly still. I want that real safe, reliable pick.
Well, I know when you were last on, Bryce, we talked about a bloke being a little bit boring, but maybe boring with, only 8 rounds to go, but reliable is something that we're actually looking forward to. So Ed Curnow, would you be tempted by him at all?
Still not tempted. I think since that recording, he's gone 95, 92, 102. So a little bit boring and a little bit low for me. So definitely prefer his teammate and Patrick Cripps if I was going to go for a Carlton player. Carlton actually have a pretty good run home. So that might not mean winning any games, but those guys should perform pretty well.
So I think, Mitchell, Cripps, Dangerfield and Kelly, if they're the top four, it sounds like Oliver and Neal and potentially Gaff would sit in that next rung below. So that's seven sort of options to pick from. Hopefully there'll be somebody there that you can choose from in terms of a top scoring option. Now, we'll go to a few players that are potentially a little bit more risky but present some value when downgrading from Fife. The good thing about Fife is he's at 580K, making him one of the more expensive players. Even Cripps sitting below him at 576. Even Gorn, you know, being a massive scorer, is only at 605K. So at this stage of the season, premium prices tend to drop a little as more rookies appreciate in value. The dollar per point actually comes down a little bit as we progress through the season. So Fife does open up a lot of options, but I know certain individuals or certain super coaches are looking at downgrading Fife so that they can complete a last upgrade, for example. So they're looking to actually free up some cash. So let's look at some value options now. And the first question we have here is from Jordan Donaldson from Facebook. And he's asking about Matt Crouch now that Rory Sloane is back. And we actually got quite a few questions about Matty Crouch. He was a top eight midfielder last year, has really dropped off quite a bit this year. He's priced at 483,000. So you almost get a 400K in change trading Fife in for Matty Crouch. He scored 126 off the bye and with Sloane back in the team. Dunny, what do you reckon about Matty Crouch? Are you tempted at all?
Certainly am. I think any attention that was going to Crouch is probably going to be directed back towards Sloane now. I was a Crouch owner last year and a very happy one at that. I haven't had him this year, but that 126 being his best score for the season, I don't think it's any coincidence that it came when Sloane came back into the side and took a lot of attention away from both he and Gibbs this week. But Bryce, as a Crows man, what are your thoughts, mate?
I had Crouch in one of my earlier drafts of my team before the season starts, and had always been eyeing him off around the hamstring injury and when he was coming back. But he didn't really start scoring well until, like you said, Sloane came back into the side. I really like him at 483. I probably would like him at 520-ish K as well. So I think of all the value options there, I think that he's probably the best one there. Only in 5% of sides as well. So a bit of a uniqueness on the way home. And with the Crows making a run for the finals, he might be in for a few good scores.
Yeah, I don't mind the selection. But having said that, I think I'd still prefer to you know, really trade toward a top rung player rather than a bloke who has some question marks about his ability to finish in the top eight midfielders by season's end. I think if you're going to take a risk on a player like that, then Matt Crouch should probably be a front runner. But having said that, I'd still probably prefer the blokes that we've talked about so far. We did get another question about value options from Brian Leonard, one of our patrons, and he asked about bargain options in the midfield, and he's also listed Heppel, Pendlebury, Gibbs, and Cochin. I think I'd have Crouch comfortably in the front there. Pendles would probably be the only guy I give a run for his money. Dunny, would you get on a Pendles train like Marquez?
I would consider him definitely. Of that group that you're sort of mentioning there, he's probably the one that I'd be more likely to put my trade into than the other guys. I think he's obviously he's got the runs on the board in the past. With Treloar out now, he's going to see more of the footy. He's going to be relied upon a bit more. And we saw on the weekend that the tag went to Sidebottom and not to Pendlebury. So from that perspective, he'd probably be the one that I'd look at. But I think I'd, as we mentioned just before, I'd probably still take those other guys first. But for a bargain option, he's certainly a good pick.
Bryce, as a Crows man, how do you see the Gibbs situation panning out for the run home?
I think it's certainly a chance that he could, break out a little bit more with a focus being more on Sloane and Crouch. But I think it's a little bit of a risk. We haven't seen it before. We haven't seen how they all three of them play together except for maybe the most recent round. I probably have a little bit more faith in Matt Crouch continuing his scoring from late last year than I have Bryce Gibbs lifting to a top eight midfielder. The price difference between Crouch and Gibbs is only about 5K anyway, so I'd much rather the price of Crouch there of 483,000. I probably prefer him over Pendlebury. I'm a little bit unsure about his role going forward. He could step up in the absence of Treloar, but he could also be used where required. He might go to halfback again. He might be thrown around the midfield or just do the team thing. So I'm a little bit nervous about Pendlebury, and probably seeing as Crouch came back to form this round, I'd probably put him ahead of Pendles and then wouldn't touch the other ones.
Any other value options that perhaps we haven't talked about so far?
I've probably got one other one and another comment. It's probably not a value option, but it's probably a reliable guy going forward. But it's Josh Kennedy. He's had a really good run since about round six. Only dropped below the ton once, 140 last week. Tends to finish pretty strong. He's priced at 550, but I put him up there with the Neils and Olivers as a genuine top eight, top 10 averager on the run home. The other comment I'd make is rather than going for those the Gibbs Cotchins and Hebble types, I'd probably want to go all the way down, bank a lot of cash and go for a guy like Luke Shuey. He's priced at about an average of 75. He scored well against the Crows, Adelaide Oval in the last game, scored a 115 after a couple of low scores. I'd rather take the gamble with one of those guys and see if it comes off.
Now, we did get an interesting proposal from Kelly, one of our patrons, asking whether or not we should consider holding Fife and upgrading to Shuey instead. So instead of going all the way from Fife down to Shuey, if you can manufacture a trade to bring in Shuey for, you know, let's say Aspargo instead, would you potentially like that over trading Fife out and hoping Shuey pans out from an emergency point of view or a ninth midfielder? Thoughts about that, Bryce?
It's one thing that I've been playing around with early this week while we wait for the news on how long Fife will be out for. The other options I'm considering alongside of Shuey is Riewoldt in the forward line and Billings. Did I say that? So yeah, they could all turn out to be fairly good options. Shuey and Billings probably a bit more risky than Riewoldt. He's probably a fairly solid 80-90 to finish the season, but nothing really that exciting, unless you're a Tigers fan on Friday night or Thursday night when he was up and about. I think it's a good move if you've got a Guelphy type or a Spargo to get that M9 in. He can cover the Fife injury for 2 weeks, maybe be 10 to 20 less for those weeks, optimism. And then you get Fife on the run home. So if you can swing it, I like it as an option. I like to have that M9 premium. I know it's not everyone's style. What about you, Dunny?
If you can swing that, it's certainly a handy to have, and particularly if it can be a dual position player that you can swing forward and back, or you've got some way to either use that player, you know, to cover yourself in both the forward line and the back line. Yeah, that's certainly something at this stage of the season, particularly if I'm down on trades, you know, that can really save you a trade going forward. At the moment, you might have Fife on the bench, but then if you can have, say, someone like Rocky as your M9 going forward, yeah, you can sort of loophole him onto the field or things like that. So definitely a very good option if you can manage to pull it off.
Yeah, I think if I could get to Shuey in one trade, I'd certainly consider that. If you were having to double trade to Shuey, I'd probably hold off on that. And instead, if you're looking to bring in an M9 with a double trade, I think it's very, very sensible, as both you have mentioned so far, to go for a mid-forward or mid-back or just a bloke that can cover multiple positions instead, if it takes a double trade to cover Fife.
I think one thing I add to that, Mark, is if you get a forward F7 player like a Billings or a Riewoldt who are actually forward only, if you have someone who's missing in the midfield, what you can do is you can swing an Ahern or someone like that who's sitting on your mid bench and swap it with a Devon Smith or a Heaney or one of the players who's got DPP and is actually in your F1 to F6, swap them around. Then you've got Heaney or whatever covering your mid out, and then you bring on your F7 into the forward line for that rookie player you've brought into your forward line, such as Anna Hearn. So bringing in an F7 that's a forward only will actually cover your midfield and your forward line for premiums. And then if you've got some crazy DPPs with Sicily as well, you might actually have one player extra sitting on one particular line, and it's essentially covering for all three lines, or maybe four if you've got some ruck stuff as well. But, it's just something to keep in mind if you're considering a Billings Rewalt in the forward line or a Shuey in the midfield, you might actually be better getting that F7 that's covering both your mid and forward rather than just your M9, which is just covering your midfield.
Great call there, mate. And I'm in that situation where that might look attractive to me. So definitely a good call out. Now, next question and last one on the injuries before we move off the injury-affected players. This one's from David Bailey from Facebook. If not named, is Heaney a hold? David has 8 trades in hand. So in that situation, even though you've
been... I think he's bragging, Marcus.
Yeah, I think so too. But even with 8 trades to go, I mean... Heaney, before his 18, is clearly the top-scoring forward option in the game at the moment, and he's only out for 1 week, potentially, you know, with this concussion, and assume he's straight back in the week after that. So I think I'd find it very hard to find a scenario where you'd be trying to trade Heaney out this week. Probably even rather, you know, sideswap a rookie or even cop a zero this week to keep Heaney on for the long term. I don't know if that's sort of too blind to Heaney's top scoring, but I think it'd be a fairly narrow scenario where trading Heaney out is an attractive option. Bryce, what do you think about David's question?
8 trades is a fair bit more than a lot of people have. I would probably, in that situation, wanting to double trade to actually bring in that F7 type primo to cover Heaney for this week, assuming he is out. And then you've basically got primo coverage for the rest of the season, assuming that he is already full primo. If not, I'd be trading to get full primo, put Heaney on the bench for a week and trade around him rather than trade him.
That's a good call, mate. With 8 trades to go, you could spend 2 bringing in a premium. You still have 6 to play for the last 8 rounds. So I like that suggestion. All right. Now, just going to run through a few rookies if anyone is looking for a downgrade option this week. We've got Braden Ainsworth, who has played his 2nd game. I think his 1st game happened quite a while back. So job security is a little bit questionable, but he's a midfielder available for 117,000. He's averaging 55.5 across his 2 games. And then Jacob Dawson, who probably has a little bit better job security and his basement price, is also on the bubble in the midfield. He's averaged 55 across his 2 games for Gold Coast at 102,000. There are a few rookies that also made their debut on the weekend. Brad Lynch is probably the pick of the lot in the back line. He scored 63 for the Bulldogs, priced at 124,000. Spent a couple of years on their rookie list, being a little bit unlucky with injuries, and is some chance of playing a few more games on the run home. In the midfield, there were 3 debutants that scored 70-plus. Jack Trengove would be the one that people know best. He scored 77 for his 1st game back. Job security is probably questionable. It's his 1st game. He's broken back into the team since being moved across to Port Adelaide, and 162,000 probably is a little bit less attractive. Braden Sear for Collingwood is a big-bodied midfielder. I think he's 190 centimetres and he weighs in the high 80s. So in his 3rd year, has not really applied himself too well as per Buckley's omission in his 1st couple of years, but has really knuckled down and turned things around in the back half of last year, and that form seems to have carried. He has scored 83 on debut, which is great. And then Quinton Narkle, returning from a long-term injury and almost just burst into the Geelong side pretty quickly. He had a pretty good debut with a 73 and looked pretty dangerous around goal. So of the 3, all have question marks on them. So I don't know if you could pick any safe option there, but the fact that Narkle came into the side following an extended period of long-term injury is encouraging, but just note that, you know, there's still Menzel, Henderson, Scooter still to come back into the team, so still question marks there. For anyone looking for a mid-forward, Will Powell is 122,000 and he scored 39 on debut, and you're more looking to him as a mid-forward swingman more than job security or scoring potential. He's a pretty undersized kid. I think he was drafted at about 60-something kilos, so he's pretty damn light and hasn't bulked up too much in his first season. But a first-round draft pick, I think at pick 19, so definitely the talent's there, but probably more as a swingman more than anything else. So a few options for downgrades. I don't think there's a particular standout at this stage, but pick somebody that fits your structure if you're looking for a downgrade there. Now, to wrap up the show, let's just go over a quick captain's corner. Gents, have you, I know it's early on a Monday, but any considerations with who you might go with? Bryce, put you on the spot.
I think Orlando plays on the last Sunday game, who's a new recruit to my side. So I'll be running him as my captain, and I will be taking either Titch or Gorn, who both play on the Saturday night, and I won't need to use my backup captain in Grundy because Orlando will be having the big C, and I've probably just jinxed it for everyone else.
Dunny, how about yourself, mate?
This is a really hard one this week, I think. The two guys who I'd like to sort of VC and C are both playing at the same time, being Mitchell and Gorn. Maybe consider someone like Cripps against Brisbane on the Saturday afternoon into either Mitchell or Gorn on the Saturday night. I'll probably end up going Gorn on the Saturday night against maybe another Sanderlands-less Frio, and then playing that into a Grundy against Bell Chambers on Sunday. And if you don't have that, you could always, you could potentially then look at maybe a Yo against GWS at home in the late game on the Sunday night. But for me, I think I'll be probably going Gorn into Grundy on the Sunday.
I think to me, Gorn seems the standout option with Sanderlands being out and Frio getting beaten on the weekend fairly comfortably. I think there'll be a fair few points on offer there. So I definitely want to give Gorn the VC. I fortunately have Brander stinking up my field and being a handy loophole at least. So I'll probably go Grundy as the backup captaincy. But anyone who has Josh Kelly or Andrew Gaff, maybe fresh in from Fife, can consider them as backup captaincy options as well. All right, that wraps up this week's show. Thank you very much for joining us, Bryce, for a full show this time. Appreciate that, mate.
Fingers crossed we get the whole recording. So, yeah, thanks for having me on again.
All right. And with that, we will catch you all next week. See ya.
See you guys.
Bye.